Okay, good afternoon, ladies. We are on page 394, Parshas Yisro. I want to focus on a specific part of this parsha. The parsha is really one of the most fundamental packed parshios. We have the story, of course, of Yisro coming to join the Jewish people, which gives way to his suggestion to Moshe as to how to judge the Jewish people. They set up a whole system of courts and of judges, and that, of course, eventually leads into the centerpiece of the parsha, which is the Aseres Hadibros, which you have much, much, much to discuss, of course, the psukim right in, leading into the Aseres Hadibros right after the Ten Commandments. But I want to focus on the beginning of the parsha this afternoon with you, when Yisro comes. Now, the part that I want to focus on, not just his coming, which in itself has much to discuss, what the Torah says, Vayishma Yisro, that Yisro heard and he came. And Rashi quotes from Chazal have much to say. Rashi chooses the ones that he chooses to bring. What Yisro heard, which events did he hear about that elicited his response that he wanted to come? Rashi says he heard about Kriyas Yamsuf, he heard about the splitting of the sea, which is what we read about last week, as well as Milchemes Amalek, which was the very end of last week's parsha, that Amalek does war with the Jewish people, and he heard about those two events, the giving of the splitting of the sea and of the war with Amalek, and that's why he was inspired to come. Each one of those two things that Rashi mentioned are different opinions in Chazal. Chazal in the Medrash has many opinions. Rashi brings two, and not for our discussion this morning. What I want to discuss is who he comes with, because what doesn't seem to get a lot of attention is the fact that he brings Moshe's wife and two children with him. And the Torah speaks about this, mentions his wife, Tzipporah, three times in the opening psukim, of which we could have, on our own, if we had to rewrite it, could have done it in a much simpler fashion. The Torah clearly highlights it in a number of different times in different ways. And I think as we go through, what I found was a lot of fascinating insights are drawn from the way the Torah tells us this part of the story that he came together with Moshe's wife. So let's read the psukim inside, and then we'll go through one at a time what it is that we have to learn tangentially through the various aspects of this part of the story. So right from the beginning, page 394, Vayishma Yisro Kohen Midyan Chosein Moshe. Yisro, who was the Kohen Midyan, literally the priest or the minister of Midyan, who was the father-in-law of Moshe. So he's introduced to us right away. Moshe had run into his daughters at the well when Moshe ran. This is going back some 50, 60 years when Moshe was a young man running from Egypt, and he had just killed the Egyptian, and he runs to Midian, and he runs into a couple of young ladies shepherding flocks at a well, and the young men there were shepherding them and causing them all sorts of problems, and Moshe steps in and saves them. They bring him home, and he ends up finding the home of Yisro, and he marries one of the daughters of Yisro. So now this father-in-law of Moshe, who was quite a esteemed member of Midian, he was the Kohen Midian, he hears, Kol Asher Asa Elokim LeMoshe LeYisrael Amo, all that Hashem had done for Moshe and the Jewish people. Again, Rashi, I mentioned a moment ago, mentioned he heard about Kriyas Yamsuf and he heard about the war with Amalek. Kiyotzi Hashem Es Yisrael MiMitzrayim. In the simple reading of the Pasuk, what did he hear? He heard that Hashem took the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, and now that he has heard this, he's going to leap into action. What is the action that he takes after he hears what Hashem had done for the Jewish people and his son-in-law Moshe? Pasuk Bez, Vayikach Yisro Chosein Moshe, Es Tzipora Eshes Moshe. He took, and again he's introduced to us, who took? Yisro, the father-in-law of Moshe, who we know because we were just told that the previous verse that he was the father-in-law of Moshe. Torah repeats again that Yisro Chosein Moshe takes Tzipporah Eshes Moshe, the wife of Moshe, his daughter Tzipporah, Yisro's daughter Tzipporah, Achar Shilucheha. And why, what this, the Torah then adds that he took her after she had been sent away. Let's start with that point. What do you mean that after she had been sent away? Yisro is taking his daughter, Moshe's wife, after she had been sent away. So Rashi comments, well, there's actual a textual problem here that one should, if one were paying attention and putting this all together, would note. If you go back a few weeks when we read Parsha Shmos, and Parsha Shmos, after Hashem is introduced to Moshe at the burning bush, or I should say he introduces himself to Moshe at the burning bush, and he gives Moshe his instructions and says it's time to go back to Mitzrayim, you're going to be the Redeemer, you're going to take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. And Moshe spends a week arguing, he doesn't want to go, and eventually he agrees and he says, but I just need to ask my father-in-law first. And he goes back to Yisro and he says, I've been given this mission, and Yisro gives him his blessing, and he goes, and the Torah there says that Moshe took his wife and his sons and went down to Mitzrayim to redeem the Jewish people. So they're on the way. There was a whole story in the hotel, and his wife helps him with a bris milah on one of the with the children. It's a whole story. So now, one reading the text should therefore be bothered: why is Yisro taking Tzipora and bringing her to Moshe? Where should she be right now? The last time we saw her, Moshe himself was with her on his way down to Mitzrayim. So why is Yisro taking her? So the Torah says, a hint to that, achar shilucheha, after she had been sent away. What's missing in the Torah? So Rashi fills in. What do you mean that she had been sent away? So Rashi fills in as follows. So it's the last line on the first column if you want to read it inside. Kishomer lo kodesh baruch hu b'midyon leich shuv Mitzrayim. When Hashem said to Moshe in Midyon, still go back to Mitzrayim when Moshe was still, this is a year prior, he said, go back to Mitzrayim. It says, Vayikach Moshe sishto v'yes banav. The pasuk says, Moshe took his wife, he took his two sons, and they went back to Mitzrayim. So Rashi then says, Vayetze Aaron likroso. The pasuk described that when Moshe got down to Mitzrayim, there was one person who came to greet him first. And that was his brother Aaron. The Torah says that Aaron was samach belibo. He was joyous in his heart that Moshe, his younger brother, had been chosen with his mission. But Aaron is the one who came out to meet him. The Torah says he met him at the mountain of Hashem. And now that's what the Chumash says. And now Rashi fills in the conversation that took place from the Medrash. Omar lo, mihem halalu. Who's this? Now again, they haven't seen each other in close to 60 years. Moshe has a wife and two children. And Aaron says, who are they? Omar lo, zuhi ishti. This is my wife, Shinasasi bin Midyan. I got married while I was in Midyan. V'elu banai, and here are my two sons. Meet your uncle Aaron. Omar lo, v'heichan atam olichan. Aaron asks him, where are you taking them? What are you doing? Omar lo, l'mitzrayim. Moshe says, what do you mean? I'm on a mission. Hashem sent me. I'm going to redeem the Jewish people. I'm on my way down to Mitzrayim. That's where we're going, down to Egypt. Omar lo, Aaron says to him, al harishonim anu mitzarim. On the Rishon, the ones that are already there, we cry all day and all night about what's happening to the children, what's happening to the women, what's happening to the servitude. It's a disaster in Mitzrayim. V'yatabola hosif aleim. You're now coming to bring more children into this mess, into this Gehenna. Moshe, Aaron says to him, how could you bring your wife and children here? Amar lo, so Moshe says to his wife, Tzipora, l'chi leveis avich, go back to your father's home. Not lo shnei vanav, v'hol chalos. So she took her two children, and she went. And so that is what the Torah describes, achar shilucheha, after she'd been sent away. Because the last time we saw her, she was with Moshe on her way down to Mitzrayim. Now we're introduced to Tzipora again, and Yisro was taking her from Midyan and bringing her to Moshe. What happened? So the Rashi fills in this conversation that Aaron had, in which Aaron sent her back. A couple of fascinating points. Number one, what was Moshe thinking? Aaron makes a good point, yeah? Like, what are you doing? What are you doing? How could you bring them down to Mitzrayim? We're crying over those that are there already.
So what was Moshe thinking?
I asked you first.
That is going to be easy. He's going to take them out and that's it.
You're right.
That so, should be a help.
I'm saying something. I didn't see this anywhere. Maybe I did in past years and I forgot who. So I'd like to give credit to this. I'm just saying it's my own thoughts. What was Moshe thinking? Aaron says, you can't bring him here. And he agrees. And Moshe sends him back and Tzipora goes home. So what was Moshe thinking? So I think you could say a couple of things. It could be could be, but I doubt this. I don't know that Moshe was aware that the tribe of Levi wasn't suffering from the same fate as everyone else. It's possible that Moshe either knew or had been told by Hashem. Somehow he knew that the tribe of Levi, in general, was not subject to the same servitude as everybody else, and so he thought that he'd be able to sort of dock them among. He is from the tribe of Levi, and he'd be able to dock his wife and children amongst the tribe of Levi, and they would be protected. That's possible. That's possible. I think it also, one can say, that Moshe was thinking, I know it's going to be a Gehenna. I know it's terrible. I know it's horrible. But to experience the Geula, yeah, you have to be there to experience the redemption, to experience the 10 plagues, to experience Korban Pesach, to experience the night with the blood on the doorpost, to experience Hashem passing over our homes, to experience Yetzias Mitzrayim, to experience the splitting of the sea. My wife and children have to be a part of this. Mm-hmm. You can't just join after that. There was this huge shared experience, a massive life-altering shared experience in which Hashem revealed Himself through the year of the plagues, through the Korban Pesach, through leaving, through Kriyas Yamsuf. They have to be a part of that. It's not something you can just join in, hear about, and say, we were part of this in the same way. It's not the same. It's not the same. And so Moshe, I think you could say this, again, I would quote this in the name of somebody if I remembered who I saw this from, Moshe felt they have to be there. I know exactly where I'm bringing them to. They have to be a part of this. But Aharon, boots on the ground, said, Moshe, it's Gehenna. You can't bring children into this. They're ripping them from our arms and throwing them into the Nile. You can't bring more Jews down to Mitzrayim. They're safe now. Send them home. And they go home. And that could be the two sides as to what it was. So Moshe wanted to bring them. He wanted them to be part of the experience. And Aaron says, you can't. I wanted to share one other comment. The Maharal makes a comment and says, how did Rashi know to say that it was Aharon who convinced him to go back? We know that they left with Moshe. We know that by the end of the story, they're back in Midian. How do we know that this is the way that it played out? Where did the sages see that it was Aharon who had this conversation? So Maharal has a fascinating insight. He says, because what is the other option? He said, there are two other options. One is that Moshe on his own changed his mind. He originally thought, I want to take them with me. And on his own, he changed his mind. He says, unlikely. If Moshe made the decision to take them, he would have taken them. He wouldn't have changed his mind on his own. That was his decision that he made. What's the other option? They actually made it. If he didn't change his mind on his own, it must have been they actually made it to Mitzrayim, and then they left. He says, that can't be. Can't be that Moshe would have brought them actually to Egypt and then sent them home. Because had that happened, the Jewish people would have said, this guy's going to come and save us and take us out of Mitzrayim. He showed up for 2 days. He sees how bad it is. He sent his family home. He's going to save us. That would have melted their hearts if their leader would have shown up and then sent his family home after getting there. They would have lost total confidence in him. So it can't be, says the Maharal, that they actually made it to Egypt and then went home. Can't be that he just changed his mind on his own. He made a decision. He was going to carry it out. Who's the only person he read into before actually getting to Mitzrayim? That was Aaron. The Torah told us that Aaron came out to greet him. Chazal said, it must be Aaron. Someone equal to Moshe said to him the other side of the equation, which is, you can't bring him. It's not right. You can't do that. You must send him home. And Moshe agreed. Those are the thoughts on this first pasuk that Yisro came and took Tzipora and brought her to Moshe. Let's go back to the psukim. Pasuk Gimel. V'yeshnei vaneha, he also, Yisro, brought her two sons. Asher shem ha'echad Gershom. The older one's name was Gershom. Ki Omar, why was he named Gershom? Because Moshe had said, Ger ha'isi bi'eretz nachriya. I was a stranger or a foreigner in a foreign land. Interesting. We're told here now, years after he was born, when Yisro simply bringing him back, and we already know that he was born because when the Torah described Moshe getting married, he was born and named, so we already know that he exists. But the Torah here highlights again why he was named Gershom, that Moshe felt that he was a stranger in a foreign land, which in itself is always an interesting point, that Moshe named his son as a constant reminder of, this is not my home. I'm living in Midian, I got married here in Midian, I don't belong here. And he named his son. We find all many, many times throughout the Torah that the names that people give to their children were symbolic of positions they had in life or yearnings or dreams that they had for life. And here also Moshe names his son, I am a foreigner. I am a stranger. I don't ever want to be comfortable. You imagine he named his son. So when Gershom would grow up playing with the little kids in kindergarten, I'm a stranger here. It's a message in that. I don't belong in this land, this is not my home. That was his elder son. And the Torah tells us who was his second son, Eliezer. Because Hashem has been a support, the God of my father has been to my aid or support to me, and saved me from the sword of Paro. When did Hashem save Moshe from the sword of Paro? So on the simple meaning, it would be when the reason why Moshe ran to Midian in the first place. He had killed an Egyptian, and the word had gotten out, and Paro wanted to kill Moshe for that. So Moshe fled. So Moshe says, I was spared from the sword of Paro. And in the simple meaning, the verb, or the idea that he was saved from his sword meant that I was saved from being pursued or persecuted by Paro. Rashi quotes a medrash that he meant literally, I was saved from the sword of Paro. Rashi quotes a miraculous event which took place that Paro literally tried to kill Moshe, and that Moshe's neck had turned into a marble, a solid piece of marble to ward off the sword of Paro. So that he literally said, I was saved from the sword of Paro. Either way, he names his son as a remembrance of that event. Eliezer, I was saved, the God of my father saved me from Paro, so that his two sons were a constant reminder to him of, I don't belong here, and Hashem has saved me, and that's the reason why I'm able to survive where I am. In any case, in the context of our psukim that we're reading, Yisro hears about these miracles, and he brings Tzipora, he brings Moshe's wife, and her two sons, Gershom and Eliezer, and the Torah tells us their names and why they were named, what they were named. Okay, so far so good. Let's go on. Pasuk Hey. Vayavo Yisro Chosein Moshe. Yisro, the father-in-law of Moshe. This is now the third time that he's been introduced to us in that context. Came Uvanavi Ishto with Moshe's children and his wife, El Moshe to Moshe, El Hamidbar, Asher Huchon Nesham, Har Ha'elokim, to the wilderness where he was encamped, to the Har Ha'elokim, to the mountain of Hashem. Now this entire pasuk is extraneous because the pasuk just said in verse 2, pasuk Beis, it says, Vayikar, he took them. So you could have very easily abridged that into one brief sentence. You could have said, he took them and he came, in one, two separate psukim. He took them, and then we have an entire pasuk describing, and he came. Yeah. And if we wouldn't have had that pasuk, so we would have assumed eventually he got there, he's going to have a conversation, but now we have an entire pasuk saying that, and not just saying that he came, but going through the whole list again. And he came. Who came? Yisro, the father-in-law of Moshe, with his wife and his two children, whom he had taken two verses before. Rashi comments over here as well that the fact that the Torah highlights where is Moshe right now? He's in a midbar, he's in a desert. So the Torah highlights, Rashi points out, that it's b'shivcho shel Yisro dibir hakasa. The Torah is telling us in praise of Yisro that he went to see Moshe. It's not like Moshe Rabbeinu went to Miami Beach and his father-in-law decided to visit him in the middle of winter. If that would have been the case, you would say, okay, yeah, he wanted to visit his son-in-law. His son-in-law got a new shul in Miami Beach. His father-in-law is hanging out in Montreal. And he decided, I want to go visit my grandchildren. I want to go visit my son-in-law, see how he's doing in Miami Beach. No, that's not what happened. His son-in-law, Moshe, is in a midbar. He's in a desert. He's in the middle of a wilderness. There's nothing there. Yisro's on the top of the world. He's sitting in Midian. He's the Kohen Midian. He's got everything set up. And Nodva Libo, let's say Salamidbar Makom Tov. He left everything to go into a wilderness, into a midbar, where there was nothing. Lishmoya divrei Torah, to hear words of Torah from Moshe. So the Torah highlights in this pasuk that he came, and he came, where did he come to? To Har HaElokim, which was in a midbar, in a wilderness, in praise that Yisro was willing to even do that. It wasn't just stop, he wanted to go take a vacation. He went, he left where he was, which was good, to go to a wilderness in order to see Moshe. Okay, back to our story. Vayomer Moshe, he's now arrived. And the Torah gave us a whole pasuk to tell us that he arrived. Vayomer El Moshe, and he says to him, Ani choysen cho Yisro bo elecha. I am your father-in-law Yisro. I have come to you. Vishtecha, with your wife, Ushne vaneha ima, and her two sons with her. He makes a formal introduction. So now this is the third time that his wife has been mentioned. That she was taken, that she came, and now he announces, she's here. I'm here, your father-in-law, with your wife, and with your two children. Why do I need an introduction like this? The Torah could have told us none of this, and we would have known that he arrived, he got there, there was a meeting. No, the Torah tells us he left. The Torah tells us he came. And then the Torah tells us he made an announcement. I am here, and your wife and your two children. Rashi comments, what is the meaning of this pasuk? Rashi says, Vayomer El Moshe, he said to Moshe, Al Yedei Shlech, through a messenger. Meaning he arrived at the outskirts of the camp, and he sent word to Moshe saying, I'm here. Your father-in-law has arrived, and your wife and your two children.
To clean up the house.
Close, but not quite what Rashi says. Rashi says, Ani chaysen cha Yisro, I'm your father-in-law, I'm here, and your wife. Im ein ato yotze begini, if you won't come out for my honor, I'm here. If you won't come out for me, so at least come out and greet your wife. Im ein ato yotze begini shtecha, and if you won't come out to greet your wife, say begain shne vaneha. At least come out to greet your two sons. So says Rashi from this extraneous pasuk that he makes this whole announcement. I'm here. Your wife is here. Your children are here. Come out for me. And if you won't come out for me, at least come out for your wife. And if not for her, come out for your children. Very odd that he would make such a statement like that. The Maharal gives two explanations as to what was going on in Yisro's mind that he felt the need to say this. First thing that he says, which I found to be just a brilliant insight into how we function as human beings, he says, he asks it as a question. Yisro was a roidef kavod. Is Yisro running after honor that he stands there and he says, I'm here, come out for me, and if not, at least for your wife. It's the whole thing just doesn't work. Kavod is a trait where Chazal speaks so strongly about. The more you run after kavod, the more it runs from you. It doesn't work. Kavod is something that you earn by being humble, and people bestow it upon you. The more you seek it, the less you have. It's always that way. Yet, despite the fact that we all know that people always still run after kavod, it's an amazing thing. The drive for kavod is such a strong, powerful drive. Very, very powerful drive for kavod. In any case, so was Yisro really running after kavod? That's what he wanted? That's what he needed? So the Maral says as follows. There is a fundamental difference between kavod and removing degradation or humiliation. Sometimes we run after kavod, and then there's a situation in which we're trying to avoid being humiliated. And those are two different traits. Running after kavod is never allowed. We don't do that. It's not helpful. It's a low quality person who runs after kavod. What does it mean to run after kavod? It means to say, I demand that you treat me the way that I feel I should be treated. And when we run after, we demand it, we want it, it never goes. But that's different than avoiding being humiliated. What I mean as follows. Let me use another totally separate example, not in the world of kavod, just to express that this is a clear manifestation, I think. a person should say thank you to a person they have a close relationship with him in the life, be it a spouse, a parent, a child, a colleague, you know, they have a close friend, close relationship, whatever the relationship may be. And you do things together all the time. So you should say a thank you all the time. It would be an appropriate thing to go and acknowledge and say, you mean so much to me. Thank you for being part of my life. If you don't, if a day goes by and you didn't say that, so you remain parv. You should have. You had an opportunity to. You could. It would have been a nice thing. You didn't. Nothing gained, nothing lost. Sometimes there are circumstances in life in which you could have done something nice, and you didn't. So you're back where you started, ground zero. Parv. Nothing gained, nothing lost. It could be in a thank you. It could be in a chance to do something nice for a friend. It could be a chance to have picked up the phone and said something. All those situations. Then there are circumstances in life which present things to us, circumstances presented to us, where if you don't take advantage of it, it becomes offensive. Person has a birthday. You have an anniversary. And you don't say thank you or pick up the phone and say hello then. That circumstance presented itself, screaming, acknowledge my presence, and you missed that. There you can't say, I'm parv, I'm exactly where I started, I'm at zero. Doesn't work that way. You're not at zero. You just went into the negative numbers. Because the circumstances demanded of you to do something, and you didn't. That's offensive. That's hurtful. It's not hurtful on a random Wednesday that you didn't pick up the phone and say hello to me, you didn't thank me, because that's life. We get busy with things. It's not offensive. It would have been nice if you did. You would have gotten some extra points. The fact that you didn't, so nothing moved. You didn't go this way, you didn't go that way. But then there was a circumstance that created itself. It presented itself. It demands that you say something. And now that you don't, that's hurtful. Same thing is true when it comes to kavod. There are circumstances in which we have an opportunity to give kavod to somebody. Take a simple example. I have a teacher, a child has a teacher in school, a bunch of teachers, obviously. So it would be nice to give your children's teachers a certain amount of kavod every once in a while, whatever the case may be. Fine, you could, you do, you don't, it's part. But if you don't, it's nice if you do. And then there's a circumstance where, let's say, you're making a simcha, bar mitzvah for your child. And you invite every single one of their teachers, except one. Because you didn't think that your child succeeded so much in that class, whatever it may be. Okay, but meanwhile, you invited every other teacher. So if you don't invite that teacher now, can you say, well, I didn't invite anybody to, I made a bar mitzvah 2 years ago, I made a birthday, but I didn't invite any teachers. Okay, you didn't invite any teachers, so you didn't gain, you didn't lose. But now you did invite every other teacher. So this one teacher, if you don't invite, can you say, well, I didn't, it's the same, I'm at zero. No, you're not at zero. You just did something, and by not inviting them, is embarrassing to them. It's humiliating. Says the Maral, to run after kavod, nish the way of the Jew. We don't run after kavod. To avoid being humiliated, to be makbid, to be particular about your own honor, that you're not embarrassed, that you're not degraded, his language is hasaras gnayu bizayon, to remove degradation or humiliation, shekol adam, every person, afilu tzaddik v'chassid, even a righteous chacham, a tzaddik, who's a pious tzaddik, righteous person, makbir al bizyono, is particular about not being humiliated. Every person has to be careful about that. Not forget about, I brought examples of not humiliating somebody else. Every person has a right to be makbid, that they shouldn't be embarrassed. That's not called running after kavod. That's called, in the Maral's language, protecting my tzelem elokim. I am created in the image of Hashem. That doesn't mean you need to give me additional kavod that I don't deserve, or even if I do deserve it, it's okay. But to treat me in a humiliating way, I have every right to say, I am created in Hashem's image. You cannot treat me with disrespect. You cannot embarrass me. You cannot humiliate me, cause me degradation in the eyes of other people, because I am a Tzelem Elokim. Says the Maral, Yisro shows up. What would be? He shows up as Moshe's father-in-law, and Moshe doesn't come out to greet him. That's not parv. You didn't send me a letter 2 weeks ago to say how you're doing. Okay, so son-in-law doesn't send his father-in-law a card every 2 weeks. Imagine a situation in which the son-in-law is living in Miami Beach, let's just say. He's the rabbi of the shul there. And his father-in-law comes for a vacation. And he shows up in Miami Beach. He came. And the son-in-law doesn't come to say hello. Now, he didn't come to say hello when he vacationed in Alabama. And he didn't come to say hello when he to check in and say, how you doing, when he went to Toronto. But now you came to my town. You're going to ignore me here? People are going to say, oh, so nice to see you. Have you seen your son? No, he hasn't. I haven't seen him yet. That is not just parf. That's degrading. So Yisroel says, I came to your camp. I'm your father-in-law. You must come, not because I'm running after kavod. I'm protecting being embarrassed. That's different. And he has a right to say that. Now, what's the pshat? Then he then says, and if not for me, come from your wife. And if not for your wife, come for your children. Of course, you have to protect every person. He writes, even a tzaddik and a chassid has a right to protect themselves, not to be humiliated. Because we must, because we're tzelem elokim. We're created in the image of Hashem. There's a certain amount of stature every human being has and must. But that doesn't mean running after kavod. It means protecting from degradation and humiliation. Difference. Yes.
That's the Maharal.
Do we know the span, the time between Sapporo was with her father until Yitro came?
It's a discussion exactly when it happened. But she goes back. We know that Moshe's in Egypt for a year from the time that she gets back. So it's a year. And it's between a year and 6 months, somewhere in that. It's not a long time.
How long was she separated?
A year, less than a year, between a year and a year and a half.
So that's okay. Fine.
Because according to Rashi, he came right back after Kriyas Yamsuf. So that's a week after he left Mitzrayim. It was about a year that he was in Mitzrayim. It's about a year. That's about a year. The Maharal then adds another explanation, he says. He quotes his brother, Achim Arenu HaRav Reb Chaim. He says as follows. We know already the Gemara says that when Moshe showed up, or when his wife shows up, people say, who's that? They said, this is my wife. They said, I didn't know there were Jews in Midian. Moshe says, there aren't any Jews in Midian. They said, who'd you marry? Said, I married this Midianite woman, the daughter of a priest.
Yes.
They said, you did what, O fearless leader? Who gave you permission? I didn't know we were allowed to do that. So the Gemara has a whole discussion about the Geirus, the conversion, the process of Moshe being allowed to marry Tzipora, the daughter of Yisro. There's much to discuss. So Maral quotes his brother and says, that's what's going on here in this dialogue between Yisro when he says, I'm here, your wife, your children. He says as follows. He says, come out for me that I shouldn't be embarrassed that I'm a non-Jew and I'm not befitting like everybody else to cling and cleave to the Shekhinah, to the divine presence like the Jews. I'm an outsider, but don't treat me that way. Come out and greet me so that I shouldn't be embarrassed as this outsider, this priest of another, but I want to be part of the people. I want to join in. And if not for just me, then come out for your wife that they shouldn't say, she's the daughter of an outsider priest. Come out to give the veracity that it's okay that she converted, that everything is done right. And if not even for her, for your children, for the sake of the children, then no one should say, these are the children of the daughter of a priest. You, Moshe, come out to establish publicly that everything was done on the up and up, because it's going to look funny now that I'm here, and I'm this well-known priest of Midian, showing up with your wife and children that the people don't know you have. Because remember, only Aharon meets them on the way in and sends them home. Moshe shows up by himself, and now all of a sudden, a priest comes with his daughter and two children and says, this is Moshe's wife and children. come out and greet us, Moshe, to make it clear, out of respect for me, that I shouldn't be treated as an outsider, that your wife should be treated as an appropriate convert, which she was, and that your children should be treated as appropriate children, come out to greet us. So that was the pshat that the Maral quotes from his brother as to why Yisro makes this big speech and says, come on out for me, for your wife, and for your children to be able to do so. What's Moshe's response? Next, pasuk. Vayetze Moshe lekras chosno. Moshe goes out to greet him. Vayishtachu vayishaklo, when he bows down and he kisses him. Vayishalu ish lirieyu l'shalom, and they speak and ask about each other's welfare. Vayavohu ha'oyalo, and brings him into his tent. Rashi comments, Vayetze Moshe, that Moshe went out. Rashi comments, kovod gadol niskabed Yisro be'os rosha. That moment, Yisro was given the greatest amount of kavod imaginable. Because Kevan Shiyatza Moshe, when Moshe went out, so you think he went out by himself? Yatza Aharon. Aharon went to join his brother. And once Aharon went out, you think he went out by himself? No. Nadav Aviv, his two sons, went out with him as well. Umihu Shira es Elu Yotzin Velo Yatza. And who would see Moshe and Aharon and Aaron's sons going out of the camp and wouldn't say, where are they going? I want to see what everyone's doing. So by the time Moshe gets to Yisro to greet him, he's with the massive entourage from amongst the Jewish people. Moshe, Aharon, Aharon's sons, and the remnants of the Jewish people coming out with them to come greet Yisro. So Rashi comes in, and a great kavod was indeed given to Yisro in that moment. One last point. The Maral points out as well. He says, what's the great kavod that Yisro actually got here? So he says, number one, had it been Moshe by himself, it would have been a terrible degradation. Like Moshe alone came, as if Yisro was a nobody, and Moshe only came. And they would have said, Moshe needed to go. It was his father-in-law. Like, he didn't have a choice. But like nobody else went. So everybody came along. So the Maral says, well, then, if the kavod, again, how do we know there was a kavod? Everybody must have come. But what did the pasuk say? Who's the only one that the pasuk describes? Read the pasuk again. Vayetze Moshe lekras chosno. Pasuk said it was Moshe alone. So says Rashi. Says I'm not explaining Rashi. Had it actually only been Moshe, then it wouldn't have been a covet at all. It would have been a humiliation that everybody would say, yeah, Moshe alone went to greet his father. He had to. He didn't have a choice. But the pasuk, why does the pasuk then not say Vayetze Moshe v'kol Yisrael? Why does it only say Moshe? And also says an amazing thing. The Lamducha Derech Musar, he says, this is to teach us the way of ethics. Shelo haya Moshe Omer Tzu'uimi. Moshe did not instruct them, come with me. He didn't say that to them. De'oz, had he told them to come, lo haya kol kach kavod, then it would not have been such a great honor. Kevan da'al yidei bakashaso hayu yotzin, because they only went out because Moshe asked them. He went out on his own, alone. And he was somech. He relied on the fact that the people would see and on their own would say, I'm not going to let Moshe go out by himself. We're going to accompany him. Had Moshe actually been by himself, there would have been no kavod to Yisro because everybody would have said, only Moshe when he had to. He didn't have a choice. Had Moshe told them to come, Vayter, we would have said it's nothing because he told them. They came on their own. And that's why the pasuk only describes Moshe as going, because he never told them to come. And that's the Derech Musar, the Maral says. A person has to be aware, look around, and see what's going on, and on their own, without being told, know when it's an appropriate thing to give respect, when it's appropriate to accompany your leader, when it's accompanied to greet somebody who's coming, not because you were told. If you were told, it right away diminishes the level of kavod that's being bestowed because you have to be told to do it. But if you do it on your own, that indeed is the greatest kavod. And Moshe relied on the people, and they followed through and came through and went to join him to greet his father-in-law. Those are some thoughts on these opening psukim, not on Yisro himself, on what he heard, which is often discussed, but on this, the highlighting the Torah has of his bringing his wife and children and all the various lessons that come out from it. Some fascinating lessons from that. Okay, next week we are not meeting. We'll pick up again, Mirtz Hashem, after that. Have a great week, a great Shabbos.